You're listening to the Jefferson Exchange. I'm Mike Green. For the first time in more than a century, researchers have discovered evidence of California condors nesting within the ancestral lands of the Yurok tribe. Data suggests that a pioneering pair of condors released in 2022 may currently be incubating an egg inside of an old-growth redwood tree. This milestone is a primary goal of the Northern California Condor Restoration Program, a collaborative effort to reestablish a self-sustaining population in the Pacific Northwest. Joining the exchange to help us learn more is Chris West. He's a senior biologist with the Yurok Wildlife Department, and he manages the Northern California Condor Restoration Program. Welcome to the exchange, Chris.
Thank you, Mike. It's a pleasure to be here, and thanks for the interest in our birds.
Well, it's been over a century since condors nested in Yurok country. Can you describe the moment that your team realized that the pair of condors released several years ago might finally be tending an egg?
Yeah, it was a pretty exciting realization, actually. The male of the pair was likely in the nest incubating and holding so still that his VHF radio transmitter on his wing switched over to a mode we call mortality mode because he hadn't moved in so long. So we were super worried that there was actually something wrong with him. And then we realized at one point, wait a minute, maybe he's just not moving because he's on an egg, which is what it turned out to be. So it went from a potential tragedy story to a super big celebration.
Well, you've noted that actual confirmation of the egg is difficult due to the remoteness of the site. So what specific behavioral changes in flight data have led your organization to determine that a nest had been established?
Well, we have GPS transmitters on every bird, so we can follow them. The GPS transmitter collects fixes on their locations and then beams that up to a satellite and sends it to our computers. So we were able to see that the female, who we were expecting could be laying, kind of disappeared from GPS view for a while and then didn't appear for several days. And when she did appear again, the male disappeared. So when you start to see that kind of switching behavior where all of a sudden one bird's beaming out signals and the other bird's kind of got GPS silence, you know, that they're inside a cavity where they can't send signals out, and then you look for this alternating data signal that shows that one bird's in the nest while one bird's out flying around and foraging, and then they switch off. So that was our primary thing, and that's what we're still following right now to just make sure that everything's going well with the nest.
Well, it seems the birds chose a cavity in an old-growth redwood in the Redwood Creek drainage. Why is this specific environment so critical to the California condor?
Well, the really big trees there with the large branches and heavy trunks create kind of its own little microclimate. And it's a place that the birds like to go, especially if the weather's bad. They can get out of the weather in those large trees. If it's snowing or sleeting or rain, they can tuck into the branches coming out midway up, and they have the rest of the branches above creating a canopy and shelter for them. So it's very popular with the entire flock. But of course, with those large trees, you also get situations where you get lightning strikes or burns where scars can rot into the tree and create cavities. Also, sometimes you get the entire top of the tree will blow off, and then the branches just below that will start to grow up to create a new canopy above, and that broken top of the tree will rot and make a little cup that's sheltered from the elements, and sometimes condors will nest in those as well.
Gotcha. So let's talk about these parents. I mean, they were released a few years ago. What can you tell us about their personalities or their journey since they were released?
They had actually a little bit of a rocky start. They started out, at least one of them did. One of them was reared at the Oregon Zoo. They had a forest fire, and that bird had to get evacuated over to the World Center for Birds of Prey in Boise, Idaho. So that bird had a little bit of a rocky start, but then they both were held back for a couple of years. It took longer than we expected to get our regulatory process going. And so they're a little bit older than the rest of the flock because they were slated to be released in 2021. We didn't receive them until 2022, so a little bit older. And they've both done really, really well. They're both very dominant birds at the site. They're the two oldest birds at the site. And so they really do kind of command the presence of the rest of the birds. And when they walk into a feeding event or something like that, everyone gets out of their way. So they're doing, exactly what they need to do. We did see them kind of pair up last year and fly around together a lot, but they didn't really explore too many nesting sites. They started that in earnest this year, which got us really excited. So we kind of were hoping that this was on the horizon.
How did they choose each other, or were they, paired up by humans?
They chose each other, and it's I'm not sure exactly how that process worked. I mean, there's so much remote time that they spend in the backcountry together that we don't see a lot of their interactions. But the next two dominant males certainly never tried to display to A0, at least never that we saw in the presence of A1. So I think they kind of had an inkling that those two were a pair and were kind of keeping out of their way. We see those next two older males displaying to other females that are younger, too young to breed at this time, but they're just kind of practicing things out. But it seems like the other birds all knew that A0 and A1 were a thing before we did.
Okay, so these birds don't have names. They've been given scientific numbers, A0, A1.
Well, there's multiple designations for them. There are Yurok names, and I am not really qualified to pronounce them properly, and I don't want to butcher them on the radio. I believe A0 is named in Yurok, the one who carries our prayers. And there's also a stud book that the zoos keep to keep track of all condors in the program, and she's number 969. And A1 is stud book number 973, and his Yurok name means at last we fly, or at last I fly.
Gotcha. What is a stud book?
A stud book is something that zoos often keep with species where they're doing captive breeding and things like that to keep track of all of the individuals in the population, especially when you have a small population. Condors only got down to 22 birds, so they numbered all of those birds, and then every bird that subsequently hatches gets the next number in the book. And we're up into the thousands now, but these birds are, like I said, 969 and 973.
Gotcha.
The 969th and 973rd condor in the recovery program to be worked with.
Okay, so it's growing, and that's good.
It is.
Well, the initial egg produced by a breeding pair, as from what I understand, often has a low survival rate. Why is that the case, and how can the experience of these birds factor into their success?
Well, I think that, it's something that's very new to them. Obviously the female knows she's laying an egg, but she's never done it before. She doesn't know quite what to expect. And then when the male usually comes into the nest after an egg lays or anything changes, there are certain behaviors and cues that are given by the female to tell him, there's something different going on here. You need to take your time, slow down, and then the male will come in very slowly and check things out. That kind of exchange and that nuanced behavior is also something that they learn. It's instinctual, but it's also something that as the pair is working through things, they kind of figure each other out. They understand each other's kind of body language and whatnot a little bit better. And then there was I did notice that when the male first took over incubating, the next day I got one GPS point for him flying around across the canyon. So he might have been sitting on the egg and been kind of trying to figure out, what am I doing here? And then went and took a short flight. Was it long enough to chill the egg and allow it to die? We don't know, and we'll find out eventually. But since that time, when he goes in to incubate, he does not leave. He's done 9-day stints where he has not left the nest. So I think he's got it down now. And that's something that they're learning as they go. If this nest fails and they lay an egg next year, I think all these behaviors just click in that much more quickly. So it's just ironing out those kinds of wrinkles, I think, at first, which causes a little bit of issue.
Gotcha. Sounds like a learning curve.
Definitely.
My guest is Chris West. He's a senior biologist with the Yurok Wildlife Department, and he manages the Northern California Condor Restoration Program. Chris, tell me about condors in general. I mean, what is their size? What do they eat? How long do they live? Where do they reside in the food chain?
Well, they are scavengers. They're very large vultures. So they have a wingspan of about 9.5 feet. They usually weigh between 18 and 25 pounds. They would stand about waist height if they were standing next to you. So they're big birds. And their role as scavengers and being so big and soaring so much like they do is to really just travel across the landscape looking for food resources. Once they pair up, they'll have a reasonable-sized breeding territory where a pair will reside, and they'll have usually several nests that they'll switch back and forth between. But they can soar 100, 150 miles easily in a day just looking for, you know, what we refer to as ephemeral or not a common food source, looking for carcasses on the landscape. When they breed, it's a pretty long cycle, so this egg will be incubated for about 57 days. After that, when the chick hatches, if it does, it will stay in the nest and be cared for by its parents for up to 6 months. Once they fledge, the parents will take care of it for about a year and a half. At that time, so they'll actually skip one breeding season, caring for this chick long term. And then when they're ready to go into their second breeding season, 2 years later, they'll kind of ditch the chick and go and start nesting again. And at that point, the chick will really be, you know, a fledged juvenile bird and be able to take care of itself, and it will be integrated with the rest of the condor flock. Then that bird will take until about 6 years of age to reach sexual maturity, so it'll spend a lot of time exploring the landscape, learning where all the resources are with other birds soaring around in loose flocks, and then when it's ready to hit adulthood and find its own kind of breeding territory and pair up with a mate, that's what it'll do, and then it'll establish its own spot.
And about how long, on average, do they live?
That's a good question. Most condors, you know, we always like to bring in, whenever we have opportunities to talk like this, about lead toxicosis. Condors ingesting fragments of lead ammunition that are in carcasses that they encounter on the landscape as food, that's the number one mortality factor for condors. And subsequently, condors don't tend to live too long with the lead on the landscape. So we know that closely related species, Andean condors, have lived to 80 years in captivity. We also know that there's condors within the breeding program right now that are about 60 years old that are still breeding. But most of the birds out there are succumbing to lead toxicosis long before they get to 20 or 30 years old.
Well, we've got about a minute left, and I really want to ask you this important question. The Yurok tribe initiated this project in 2008 as a way to heal the landscape. So how does the return of the condor specifically contribute to the environmental and cultural revitalization of the tribe?
Condors are very important to the tribe. They were considered to be one of the first animals created by the Creator, and they actually donate their feathers and their song in Yurok belief to the high dances that the tribe members dance to bring the world back into balance. And so those contributions are super necessary for the tribe to be able to carry out the practices that they carry out. On top of that, it was believed that condors are actually the messenger that carry the prayers of the people to the heavens when they're praying for the world to be brought back into balance. So you can imagine, that's a major impact to a tribe that believes that the very messenger of their prayers is gone from the landscape. So bringing condors back, I think, is really important to the revitalization of the Yurok people and their culture.
Definitely sounds like a worthy effort. Thank you so much, Chris. I appreciate you sharing this information.
Thank you for having me.
My guest was Chris West. He's a senior biologist with the Yurok Wildlife Department, and he manages the Northern California Condor Restoration Program.